The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
From the NBC 7 studio in San Diego, this is a podcast that dives behind the stories making headlines in our community. In this episode,
I don't know. I have so many questions. I have more questions than answers.
Documents show border agents targeting journalists, attorneys, and immigration advocates tied to the migrant caravan.
Our team dug into why these people were targeted and what happened after they made this list. The story made headlines across the country.
So it's just outrageous.
It's disconcerting. Talk about Big Brother.
So what's happening now and how did we get here? We want to pull back the curtain and share our path on reporting this story. I'm Tom Jones.
And I'm Mari Payton with NBC San Diego's investigative team. Okay, Tom, so let's just start from the very beginning and talk about sort of how the team got wind of this.
Yeah, so it was a Saturday morning, and our assignment editor, Bill Feather, gave me a call, and he was calling to tell me that he had gotten these documents from a Homeland Security source, and what the documents showed was that agents were targeting and listing journalists, attorneys, immigration advocates, activists, and the list was labeled as suspected organizers, instigators, and media tied to the migrant caravan. In total, there were 59 people on this list, 10 journalists, 3 attorneys, and 46 immigration advocates or activists. And at first, you know, to be honest, I was a little skeptical. I mean, this didn't seem, it seemed a little out there, I guess, to me. And
when I remember we were sort of talking about the validity of this, would we need to find a second source? How did we know that these weren't made up, right?
Right. And it wasn't really until I started Googling the names that I started seeing these articles where basically the people on our list were quoted in articles saying that they were stopped at the border, that they had gone through secondary inspections, or even, you know, denied entry. And that's when we got in contact with a photojournalist from San Diego.
And just so I have it on camera, if you could tell me your full name.
Sure, it's Ariana Dressler.
Ariana, she told us that she had been stopped 3 times. At the end of December and in the beginning of January. And basically, these are secondary inspections. So when you're crossing the border, you scan your passport, you normally go through. But what she said was happening was when she scanned the passport, agents took her to a back room where she had to wait. And she's waiting, and these plainclothes officers basically come back and start asking her questions. And they're asking her, you know, she said that it wasn't totally unusual, but at the same time, it seemed a little strange the first time around. You know, she was being asked questions about what she's seeing in the shelters and being said that, you know, that she's being told, you know, you're on the ground and we're not. So what are you seeing? And then at the end of that first conversation, basically agents told her that, you know, you're going to want to plan ahead for this in the future, because when you come across again, you're going to be stopped.
I think it's important also to note that she was a freelance journalist, but she had pretty good credentials. She was working for outlets like BuzzFeed and United Press, and she had a lot of experience. And so I think when we actually brought her here to NBC Studios to interview her, and we were both there for the interview, she was just really credible. And she sort of understood that she could be asked these questions in secondary screenings. I think what got to her was when we actually told her, right, she was on the database because she had sort of been wondering why she was being stopped all of a sudden, because she had gone back and forth across the San Ysidro, Mexico border without incident, without being stopped a second time for months leading up to when it started happening repeatedly over those three instances.
If I was asked by an agent, what was I doing? I would tell them, you know, I was photographing at the shelters. Eventually they said, you're being sent to secondary. And so I thought that was kind of weird. I don't understand what people are hoping to find. I don't know. I have so many questions. I have more questions than answers.
Another part of this is that in addition to the database documents that we got, we also got what the source told us were a list of dossiers. And to describe that, basically this was like a profile written on individuals that were in the database that had a lot of personal details on them. And we only got one copy of one dossier. We got a screenshot of a list of dossiers, but we only have a copy of one that we could actually look inside and see the details. And it was on an attorney. And the details included, you know, in addition to her, you know, personal information you'd have like on your driver's license, it had her mother's name, it had her car make and model and license plate number. And it also had her work and travel history. So it seemed like they were compiling a lot of information. But you're right, like Ariana still was allowed to enter the country to do her work. But that wasn't the case for everyone.
My name is Kitra Kahana. I've worked for National Geographic Magazine, The New York Times, CBC in Canada, a whole host of different publications.
So Kitra was actually in Honduras at the time working, and I got to speak with her over the phone. And she told me that her experience was a bit different because she was actually denied entry into Mexico. She said in December at some point when she was covering the caravan, Mexican police had taken a photo of her passport. And she thought it was a little unusual, but, you know, continued working. And they actually took photos of other journalists that we later found out were in this database. But Kitra said it came down to one time when she was trying to fly to Mexico City. And she had a flight from Vancouver to Detroit to Mexico City. And at every stop of the way, she was getting stopped when she would scan her passport. It would get flagged and she would get stopped and she would have to get interviewed by agents. And by the time she gets to Mexico City, she's actually detained for hours. We're talking like in all, it was about 13 hours. And there was really no information given to her as far as why this was happening. You know, she had her phone taken away. She wasn't allowed to call her embassy. If she had to use the bathroom, she was escorted by agents. And eventually she was told, no, you can't enter the country. So she had to get on a flight and go back home.
It's confusing to me. I don't understand why they're targeting journalists for this type of work. In the current state of journalism, it's really freelancers who are bringing so much of the news to the public. The uncertainty of having alert placed on your passport and not knowing where and when that's going to prevent you from doing your work is really problematic.
Which of course affects her work, her livelihood. And I mean, just back to sort of the process and behind all of this, you know, I think by this point, right, Tom, we felt like we had enough to go with the story, but we needed to contact all of the agencies that were potentially involved in this database, or at least the people that had access to it, because it was all under the umbrella of the Department of Homeland Security. So we did contact Customs and Border Protection, ICE, Homeland Security, the San Diego sector of the FBI, and we gave them a couple days, 4 days to get back to us, and we didn't hear anything. But an hour before our actual deadline, they did get back to us, and they didn't outright confirm or deny that that surveillance program, this database existed, but they did sort of defend their tactics. And I think it's important to note, too, that sort of the timeline in all of this, right? This isn't something that we've been working on for months. I wrote this story, the initial story, in one day.
Right.
And I think we felt, once we had the interview on camera with Ariana Dressler, that, and then we could contact these agencies, we should go with it. At least I remember that was a discussion we had. I was like, we need to go forward. I didn't want to sit on it. And not because I was worried that someone else would get this information, but it sort of felt too heavy to keep on our plate.
Exactly. And, you know, it was, I think it was about a week and a half that we actually, from the beginning point of getting these documents, to you know, calling all these people, kind of connecting all of these dots. And, you know, I've actually heard from some people saying, I can't believe you waited that long, given the how important, how crucial this information is. But, you know, we really wanted to do our due diligence and make sure what we were looking at was accurate.
We did talk about, and I think it's important to note this as well, about showing the people on the database, not showing the people, blurring them out, trying to contact everyone. I think we should let people know that there was a lot of thought, a lot of discussion put into that. We had the documents, and at first we just wanted to be transparent, of course, to the public and to viewers and readers. And so we were just going to publish everything that we had.
Right. But with that said, there could be people out there who are on this database who have their, you know, the entries themselves have your photo, your name, and then this role that the agents had assigned to you, like you're a migrant caravan organizer or instigator. So for the people that we hadn't contacted or spoken to at that point, you know, who knows if they really wanted their name and face out there connected to this. So in the end, after lengthy discussions, we made the decision to blur those that we hadn't talked to and gotten permission from, but also to include an email address so that people could get back to us and get in contact with us if they wanted to know if they were on the list.
Yeah, and I initially didn't really like that idea, to be honest. I remember the discussion we had, Tom, was that I was worried that we would get bombarded by people, and I didn't think it was my duty sort of to be that buffer. You felt otherwise. We compromised on it. We obviously, you know, we do TV, but we also post things online. And so we didn't include that email address and encourage people to contact us via the broadcast version, but then ultimately we put something at the end of the initial web article, the response was overwhelming. And yes, it was a lot of work, but in the end I think was very helpful and a helpful tool.
Well, that's great. I agree with you. I think it was a really good conversation to have. But in the end I just felt like my role as a journalist is to inform. And for those out there who wanted to know if they were on this list, we needed to give them an avenue to find out.
And while we're a local NBC station owned by NBC, we decided to sort of follow up with our colleagues at the network level, which was a good decision because this story was it turned into an international story. And we have a national security reporter, Julia Ainsley. So we contacted her before the story published and aired so she could speak with her sources, confirm some of our information for us. And from her sources, she was hearing that these documents, this database was authentic. And so at that point, right, we felt, let's do it. Let's publish. And we did publish on the web first, hours before it even aired on TV.
Right. And at that point, the story spreads like wildfire.
A list of people maintained by our government.
Interviews and documents obtained by the NBC station in San Diego. This remarkable, terrifying story.
59 names, including attorneys, journalists, and aid workers who simply are doing their jobs.
So probably 20 minutes right after we post the story, a spokesperson for Customs and Border Protection, they put out a new statement, and they say the people on the list were specifically targeted because they witnessed assaults against border agents.
Border Patrol agents fired gas canisters at children and families approaching the U.S.-Mexico border.
Right. So there were two incidents. There was one in November and one in January where those from the caravan, but also activists, real instigators, clashed with border agents. But at that point, we get this new statement. And the story, mind you, the story had been live for, 30 minutes at this point. And I'm calling the journalist back that we had talked to say, hey, were you there for this? Did you witness this? But also, did agents ask you about these clashes altogether, right? Because if you're doing a law enforcement investigation on a clash with an agent, you definitely would want to ask witnesses about the incident itself. But the journalists we were talking to, all of them said they were never asked about this specifically. So that struck us as odd, given that that was the reason agents were saying they were put on this list.
So the reaction to the story was immediate. I don't think anyone expected it. I certainly didn't. I know you were sort of nervous, not nervous, but you were apprehensive, right, to publish the piece. We knew a lot of people would have an interest in this and a lot of people would be reading it. And I was like, do it, just publish. Because as soon as we did, Twitter, Facebook, it just blew up and we knew it would not be a normal day. We still had to focus on the broadcast version, which a lot of it's my part. Obviously, I'm on camera. So we did, I think, a version in the earlier shows. I know definitely at 6 o'clock and I was driving home. It had been a long day and I knew that it would just be a long night.
Right.
I remember sort of checking, my phone was going off all night and I wake up early and I looked at my phone multiple times. Not only were we getting questions from people asking if they were on the list, we were getting multiple requests from other journalists to do interviews about our story on their shows, and not just on NBC shows, but international shows. The first one I think I did that morning was the BBC, and we did a lot of radio that day, but we also had to focus on the next day's follow-up story. So we sort of had a lot of on our plate. It was a busy day, and you weren't even here.
Right. And at the time,
Thanks for leaving me, Tom.
Exactly. I abandoned you. I had gone out of town for this journalism conference, NICAR. Go NICAR. And I wake up the next day in my hotel room, and my phone is blowing up. Not only from requests for more information, but also from that email address we had put in the story. So many people were reaching out to say, am I on this list? And it actually, we actually heard from a lot of people who were on the list, who actually contacted us after seeing it to say, hey, it's blurred, but I think I can see myself there. And, it was really getting out there.
So we're talking, this is the timeline, right? We publish a story on a Wednesday online, and then we put it on TV Wednesday night. And so now we're talking about what we're going to do. It's Thursday morning. We're in our normal editorial meeting. It starts at 9 a.m. every morning, and talking about what we're going to do. Well, we have a sister station, Telemundo here, T20, and they've been talking to people. Obviously, this is a huge interest in Mexico, too. And one organization, Pueblo Sin Fronteras, they had 10 people from their group that was actually on that database.
I've specifically asked many of the officials who have sent me the secondary inspection, why are you sending me the secondary inspection? And on at least one occasion, the officer said, I don't know why, the screen just tells me to send you there.
And then coincidentally, California's Governor Gavin Newsom, he was in town, so we were able to ask him what he thought about the database, and he gave us his response.
I mean, the irony of that shouldn't be lost on anyone, that we have better data collection against journalists than we do children and parents. Mm-hmm. You can't make that up.
Also, Democratic lawmakers, they were pretty upset over the next few days.
So it's just outrageous. There is no innocent explanation. And this is exactly the kind of oversight that House committees need to be doing on this administration.
They begin sending letters to CBP, Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen. They wanted to know, you know, who directed the program, who was on the list, why they were on the list. They wanted copies of the dossiers. They wanted a lot of information. It was sort of interesting to see that response and who got back to us right away. We did have a couple local elected officials here. I think it's worth mentioning. I think Congressman Mike Levin was the first person, Juan Vargas. But then we were also trying to reach people. We wanted, obviously, to balance things out. And we tried Republican Duncan Hunter. Nothing from him. Nothing from Kamala Harris, Dianne Feinstein. But we did have representatives from different parts of the country that chaired pretty important committees, Committee on Homeland Security. Benny Thompson's a part of that. And also Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut and Senator Merkley from Oregon. They all had a pretty swift reaction to it.
And they also gave a deadline. I mean, they said to, you know, they reached out to Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen. They reached out to CBP Commissioner asking about these people in the database, asking for copies of dossiers. And in one case, the Homeland Security Committee actually gave a week deadline, a 1 week deadline.
Which they didn't meet. I think it's important to note. So yeah, they had that week deadline, which had already passed. And so while a lot of these lawmakers were upset, not everyone sees this program as a bad thing. And we thought it was important to sort of balance out this story.
This is well within the authority of the Customs and Border Protection Agency under laws that have been passed by Congress. When you use words like dossier or harassment, or illegitimate inquiry, you're reaching a, you're begging a conclusion, which really awaits a further examination of the facts.
So Alan Burson, he is a former CBP commissioner who had served under President Barack Obama. And he basically said that really, we shouldn't be jumping to conclusions about this because surveillance of this type is well within the rights of CBP, the agency that monitors our border, and that specifically under laws that were passed by Congress. And, you know, he said really that we don't know yet if this is an illegitimate inquiry. Also, there was Peter Nunes.
Certainly it's not a violation of anybody's rights to ask them, why were you there? What did you learn? What are you willing to tell me about your experience dealing with the migrants? If a Democratic president was doing these letters wouldn't have been written.
Peter Nunes is a U.S. attorney and worked as a former border enforcement director under the George H.W. Bush administration. He also said, you know, really, we lawmakers are jumping to conclusions, and that the government, you know, really has an interest in, he used the word infiltrating, the migrant caravan movement.
But of course, there was a lot of reaction from First Amendment groups, specifically the ACLU. I remember they issued a very quick response. They called that database, they were saying it was unconstitutional. They referred to it as a First Amendment disaster. And we had a lot of questions whether or not any legal action was going to be taken on behalf of the ACLU. And they basically have told us at this point they're exploring all options.
So at this point, two congressional deadlines have passed with no answers from CBP. That includes the House Committee on Homeland Security and Senator Merkley.
Right, yeah, Senator Merkley's today. And then there is another one, which I think I had mentioned, but Senator Blumenthal gave DHS a deadline later on in March.
A little bit longer. But CBP did not respond. And meanwhile, you know, CBP says their Internal Affairs Office is investigating this, as well as the Homeland Security Inspector General's office. They say they're investigating the program as well.
Kathleen Rice, Representative Kathleen Rice from New York, told us yesterday after the deadline had passed, I asked her, what are the options? Are you going to stay on top of this? She said that they have, as part of the committee that she's part of, they have subpoena power. They could subpoena the Border Patrol commissioner for answers. And if he didn't respond to that, he could be held in contempt of court. But before that all happens, they probably would call him in to give oral testimony in front of the committee. So that's sort of the next step they're looking at. But they are giving some of these people, Kirstjen Nielsen and the CBP commissioner, a little bit more time.
So, I mean, at this point, you know, we've been investigating this for, I think we're now in our third week. What do you think are some of the takeaways, like moving forward, as far as what we still need to answer?
I mean, we definitely want to know, is it happening in other places? We're obviously not the only border town. So that's been a priority to see, is this similar thing happening in Texas, in New Mexico? And we are sort of hearing some early reporting of not necessarily the database, but of people being stopped for secondary screenings and questioning and that sort of a thing. I think it's imperative for us to stay on top of these deadlines that these committees have set up and to really press Customs and Border Protection and DHS. They haven't been that transparent. They haven't been that swift in responding to our questions. And I think it's definitely important for us to stay on top of them.
Another thing that I'm really interested in and is that, so in these documents, there was this logo and it was basically, it represented as international liaison unit between the United States and the Mexican government. And so from the Homeland Security and counterterrorism officials we spoke with, they basically indicated that this was a partnership between both countries. But when our story came out, the Mexican government said they did not know about this program. In fact, they said they wanted answers from the United States about this program. So that's another thing I kind of want to look into. I think that's interesting that are the countries cooperating in this surveillance-like method? Remember, you know, one of the photojournalists told us that her passport was actually photographed by Mexican police. So is there a cooperation there? And where did the directives come for this? Did this come from Washington, or was this just a local surveillance initiative responding to the migrant caravan's arrival?
And I think the story is definitely far from over.
Thank you for listening. You know, this is a new medium for us, but we do want to use this to kind of go behind the scenes on some of the stories that we're covering here in San Diego. And to follow our stories specifically on the database, you can log onto our website, nbc7.com, and search surveillance.